Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Welcome as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more. Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of the BCCI's Let's Talk Business. Last week, we brought you the first installment of our special coverage of the BCCI post-budget presentation held recently at the Hilton Barbados Resort. That program set the tone for the national conversation, offering critical insights into the key measures outlined in this year's budget and how they are likely to influence the business community and the wider economy. Today, we continue that discussion with part two, featuring highlights from the panel discussion segment of the post-budget forum. This portion of the event brought together some of the island's most respected economic voices, leaders who sit at the intersection of policy, private enterprise, taxation, and financial governance. Their perspectives offer depth, balance, and clarity on the issues shaping Barbados's fiscal direction. We will hear from James Clark, President of the Barbados Private Sector Association, who shared the views and concerns of the business community regarding investment, competitiveness, and the operating environment. Joining him on the panel was Minister Marsha Cadle, Minister in the Prime Minister's Office with day-to-day responsibility for economic affairs and planning. She provided insight into the government's priorities, the rationale behind key policy decisions, and the expected impact of the national economic agenda. Rounding out the discussion were Sophia Weeks, East Caribbean tax engagement leader at PricewaterhouseCoopers, who analyzed the tax implications and compliance considerations emerging from the budget, and Lisa Padmore, CEO of the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Barbados, who brought a governance and professional accounting lens to the conversation. Together, their contributions offer a comprehensive, multi-sector perspective on where the economy is heading and for what both businesses and citizens should prepare.
You spoke about the FOB valuation on the container and freight that is coming into Barbados. And you noted that that the duties are now going to be on the FOB valuation rather than the CIF. But in the same budget, it was mentioned that the freight costs from CMA, CGM, Maersk, they're all increasing, some with container costs increasing from $200, US $200 to $700. And my question to you is, yes, you have the free on board valuation effect, but you also have this rising cost for container traffic. What would be the net impact for businesses, you think, from this policy change?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't have the figures. However, I think that we cannot regulate what others will charge. Mm-hmm. Barbados can only deal with what Barbados can deal with. So I think that is why we have opted to use the FOB valuation, because then we are able to contain those prices there. With respect to the other prices that might have been charged, when the items come into the country, we can't do anything about that. However, it will still result, the reduction, or rather, basing the calculation on FOB, will still result in a reduction to businesses overall in the cost of the good. So I think that is still a good measure to help to contain the inflationary increases that might arise as a result of the shipment costs, which we know will vary from time to time.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I want to follow up on some of the energy measures that have been included in the budget. Minister Cadle, one of the things that I noted is that most of the measures are for 3 months. So you have the electricity subsidy, the hedge expires in June. What's the government's plan for after that 3 month window and oil prices are still over $100?
Well, Winston, I think that you, understanding markets as you do, would know that there's a reason that we set a 3 month period, because of the uncertainty in the market. not all of the energy related measures have that 3 month period. The VAT cap, as you know, goes until 2027. And we thought that we could more easily understand and manage VAT related cash flow. Obviously, we've addressed VAT reduction on energy before, and so we have a pretty good understanding of what that will do. But the other thing is that our forecasting suggests to us that gas prices will not breach the $4 per liter threshold until the oil price reaches $110 mm-hmm. per barrel. Now, right now, Brent crude is probably around 106, so that might be soon. But the reason that we set that limit, as you know as well, to the energy company executed a hedge before. And because of the way that hedge performed, there were certain losses that were experienced. So there's a lag in the energy company also being able to manage its income in the sector. I say all that to say that we set the 3 month because we have to watch what's happening in the market. Yeah. An automatic trigger would not give us the control and the management that is needed because things are changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that that the scenario matches an automatic trigger, but there is a built-in trigger to say that once the threshold that we set is reached, we are going to revisit and see what the market can sustain and what the government can sustain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to follow on from that question to you, Jimmy. What's the private sector's capacity to really absorb the shocks that we're seeing now? And there have been some incentives in the budget in relation to greening the operations, which will help. But what do you see will be the impact for the private sector in relation to energy in particular?
So obviously, I mean, we're price takers, we're net importers, mm-hmm. and so on. So any increases of anything that goes in, and we look at the, say, prices of Bunker C, prices of energy, diesel fuel, gasoline, kerosene, and so on. But just remember that the petroleum industry is well beyond that. Plastics, fertilizers, chemicals, all these other various things that are impacted. So you will find that it is not just purely the petroleum mm-hmm. energy that we are visible, mm-hmm. you put in your car or whatever. That being said, efficiency is something that we've preached for a long time as an engineer, as my daily business. It's so important, and it's something that we can do, and it's something that we actually can control. Mm-hmm. So investing in energy efficient transportation, energy efficient buildings, energy efficient equipment, and that is not, and also behavioral, because mm-hmm. a lot of energy savings can be done behaviorally. I'm very glad to see in the budget that there is a focus on transport, because if you think about it, if gasoline is nearing $4 a liter and everybody that's on your road driving every day, you can imagine that you take a trip that takes half an hour longer than normal. You've lost that time. There's the cost of the extra fuel, right? This is serious impact. And I know this has been spoken about for years, but it's really biting now. Right, with the oil prices where they are, and this should be in very, very sharp focus, and it's something we can control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it's really important that businesses look at that, as many have already. And also, we would like to see, and I know that the best battery project is due to be the tender is out, and, mm-hmm. and the bids should be coming in soon, mm-hmm. and hopefully we can get the RE. Energy rider and sector jump started again, and that certainly will help a lot as well. Okay. So I think there's a lot that we can do as the private sector, not just throw our hands up in here and say, "Oh, look what's happening." Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do what we can.
Okay. Yes, please.
I just wanted to say something, that this energy issue is very, very important, because up to recently, I think that Sri Lanka had actually, I think it's Wednesday, made Wednesday a public holiday so that they could contain the energy costs. So we as a country really need to look. I know the government has looked at capping the, capping certain costs and so forth, and certain concessions and so forth. But if a country like Sri Lanka could have a holiday because of this energy crisis, I think it brought to mind the fact that we really need to pay careful attention to what is happening, because we are a small country and this would significantly impact the way that we do business and transact business altogether.
Okay, great. I want to bring Lisa into the conversation now. We had this really interesting change in the budget where the VAT registration threshold has now gone from $200,000 to $350,000. So on the surface, it looks like there's going to be some relief for small businesses as a result of that measure. But as businesses drop below the threshold, that means that they no longer can claim the input VAT credits. And I'm wondering what will be therefore the impact on those businesses. Maybe also there are also going to be issues with, maybe if you were previously at $300,000, you can't really deregister, or it's relatively difficult to deregister from the VAT net. So what are your thoughts on that change in relation to the VAT registration threshold?
Thank you for the question. Good morning, everyone. First of all, let me just say that I think that the measure is a good one because it improves small and medium-sized enterprises, even micros, in terms of removing some barriers to entry into business. There is a level of administrative support, I dare say even bureaucracy, around registering and being compliant once you are a registrant. For those who are in the net right now that are going to be making less than 200, really and truly you can continue to be a registrant. Once you are a registrant, whether you make $100,000 or $350,000, you are able to use the VAT against your supplies. So the question really more is around how easy is it to deregister? And I think that is a bit of the challenge around all the layers that are around our tax administration system. I don't have to tell this to the members of ICAB, but for those of you who hire them, last year was a pretty bad year for them in terms of servicing you, because of the challenges we had with our tax administration system, and we still continue to, because March 16th was the date that we should have filed year ends that were January to September, but we only got access to that tax return on March 16th. And so therefore, the certainty of process, the certainty of the platforms is really and truly where I think is our bugbear, and we really need to get a handle of it, because as we then extend that conversation, it all is about doing business in Barbados by Barbadians and people coming to Barbados. Mm-hmm. They want to have tax certainty. They want to have certainty of process. So I would say, one, it's a good measure. On the surface, it looks good. It's really just the execution and the platform and the processes that go along with it that make it easier. But generally speaking, if you're already a registrant and you're not making revenue at the level of 350,000, you would have to determine whether or not it makes sense in the grand scheme of everything else that is involved in your business, whether it's best to deregister.
Thanks a lot for that. Minister?
I know Lisa would want me to respond to that gauntlet that she's thrown down. It is true that the tax administration system and the TAMIS platform have a lot of scope for improvement. I think this is something that Minister Strawn squarely acknowledges. He and I spoke about this just yesterday. And there are planned reforms. I think that right now there is a hold in order to get through where we are now. because we don't want to go tinkering with something that, you know, that we are in the middle of. But I've seen the systems and the plans for upgrading, and I have encouraged him and the BRA to have ongoing consultation to make sure that the changes that are planned actually respond to the difficulties. But I'll take the opportunity to say that, look, many, or I dare say most of the efficiency challenges we have to do with the quality of these, some of the platforms that we use, making sure that the products, the digital products are well specified, that they are not simply out of the box, but that they respond to the particular realities of our users. These are things, I mean, I'm a former Minister of Technology, and I think technology and efficiency, having seen both of, from both of those perspectives, I mean, that is the point of the technology. And that is the point of building some of these. There's also something that I think helps, or will help. GovTech and the Ministry of Technology have as a new orientation going out to the domestic market among local entrepreneurs to make to be able to get products. So to be able to say, look, this is the challenge that the government has. We've now enhanced the scope for tech startups and others to get financing. Help us solve these problems. I think that's important too, Winston, for the problem of technology transfer that you and I have talked about so often. Let's try and solve some of these problems in our local market, because I think some of us can, and let's make sure that they're responding. But whether it's the electronic single window, the trusted trader program, all of these reforms, I think, have to be sped up to make sure that they're working together to deliver for people. So I hear you, Lisa, and the government is working on it.
I thank you, ma'am.
Okay, great. I want to change gears now to look at another sort of doing business issue, which is the transfer pricing. So, Ms. Weeks, you sort of gave us a nice introduction to this. Before we get into a deeper discussion, I have, I'll let you to maybe define this idea of transfer pricing for us, for us non-accountants. What is transfer pricing? And then secondly, I have another follow-up question, which is, should there be some sort of safe harbor provision exempting smaller related party transactions from the full documentation requirements? So those two questions to sort of get us started in relation to transfer pricing.
Okay, let me try to simplify it. So Lisa has a company in the US, and I have a company here in Barbados. She buys goods from me. And so I pay her for those goods. So Lisa might determine that she's going to charge, say, $5,000 for those goods. Sorry, I will charge her $5,000 for those goods. However, outside of the transaction between Lisa and I, those goods really cost, say, $20,000 on the open market, or might even be less, let's say less, $4,000. So the price at which I charge Lisa is really, in essence, kind of my transfer price to her for the particular product. However, I might be charging Lisa $5,000, well, the market might be less, because Barbados might be a low tax jurisdiction. And so I am able to tax that $5,000 at a lower rate here. Well, Lisa is able then to take that $5,000 as her cost, and she is in a high tax jurisdiction. So therefore, in essence, I am putting the profits into myself. I hope, Lisa, we do business so I could get the profits, mm-hmm. into my company. But while we are still in the group, but Lisa is claiming a higher cost in her jurisdiction because she has a higher tax bracket. I hope I've done a little justice, Amanda, to your area.
That's a really good explanation. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So now with respect to your second question, I know, as I said before, the return form has a question with respect to transfer pricing and whether you have the relevant documentation and so forth. I can't remember exactly how it's worded, but this may be a way for government to actually track who actually has transfer pricing, has started to look at even transfer pricing as a company. Whether they should be a safe harbor for those smaller entities, well, they may be. It might be a good idea to do that because they wouldn't have the administrative burden of having to keep the various records and so forth that is required and the benchmarking documentation and so forth. So it may ease smaller businesses, but it might more impact those that have groups and are larger entities, multinational entities, and transact business across borders.
Yeah, Lisa?
Yeah, I'm gonna follow up because I don't work for a firm, so I don't have to be as polite in how I answer this question. But the simple answer is yes. Some safe harbor provisions would be good, but as they say, the devil is in the detail. There are a couple of things that need to be balanced by the policymakers as it relates to this. One, yeah, we are already predominantly an economy that is has SMEs. So our SMEs drive our economy, and so therefore this allows them to continue to do business. Less administration, less burden of documentation that's really required, because I see transfer pricing really as documentation. Mm-hmm. You are documenting how you do business with related parties. And it is not just for our purposes, but it really is more information sharing across jurisdictions. Because if I'm doing a transaction in Barbados with someone in the UK, who's sharing the revenue, the tax revenue between those two jurisdictions? So this document is what governs this relationship. So there's a burden for that. It's also a cost. You're hiring tax professionals, et cetera, to help you with this. I also think there is a level of upskilling that has to be done by our revenue authority. It is not sometimes as simple as it sounds. Obviously, the larger the group and the structure is, the more complex the transfer pricing arrangements could be. So there is a level of upskilling, and in the grand scheme of everything that's going on in Barbados Revenue Authority around Pillar 2, et cetera, this is something else that needs to be put into their wheelhouse in order to be able to manage this appropriately. But we also have to balance our, what I call our compliance with OECD kind of requirements, as well as us as a jurisdiction doing business. Because regulation is now what I want to call a badge that you want to go out into the world to say, I am open to business. We can't just fly in the face of organizations like OECD and FACTA, et cetera. There's a level of compliance that makes you a partner to want to do business. So you have to balance that with the need to promote business and activity in your jurisdiction. So I think all those come into play as you start thinking about safe harbor provisions. And obviously the policy makers obviously are thinking about that. We have seen a first glance of that legislation, and there has been feedback that has been given, at least by ICAB, to the Ministry of Finance on that legislation. And as the minister said, he hopes that it would be one that would be debated in Parliament by May. So look forward to it.
Great. I want to change gears to look at some of the growth enhancing measures. You know, one of the things I force my daughter to do is I force her to listen to the BBC on the radio on mornings when we're driving to school. And we were listening to the story, and the story said that this person was working, well, they started working in the 1980s. And she asked, were you alive in the 1980s, Daddy? I was like, yeah, I was alive in the 1980s. And, well, you're really old, boy, Dad. But I remember the 1980s because we had Intel in Barbados. We had a number of really great furniture manufacturing companies in Barbados as well, exporting throughout the entire Caribbean. And one of the things that this budget has spoken about is moving the size of the industrial sector from around 6% of GDP to around 25% of GDP within a decade. So it's a really large and very ambitious goal. And the good thing about manufacturing is that it pulls in resources from around the world, but it also exports. So it creates foreign exchange, it creates jobs, and so on. So I wanted to hear from the panel, what are your thoughts in relation to this vision? So Jimmy, do you think this vision is too ambitious? Is it something that we can achieve? What are your thoughts in relation to this?
I certainly think that given the areas of focus mm-hmm. for the GIGA program, it certainly speaks to the future and where the world is going. Certainly, and it is in areas of manufacturing that are not necessarily commodities. Mm-hmm. It's hard for us to compete in a commodities market. So we're looking for areas of high value and obviously needed products and services. So I definitely think it's a great idea, and certainly we look forward to receiving more information on it, what the program is, how it's going to work, and when it can be rolled out in the different steps and so on. So we certainly support the change. As to the ambition, even if we hit, you know, if I think if we were able to double our export capacity or even triple it, I think that would definitely be successful.
Yeah. Minister Cato, I think there was a question in there for you. The specifics in relation to this plan, you know, are there going to be tax concession packages, investment thresholds, industrial corridors? What are some of the things we're hoping to do over the next couple of years to support this vision?
I definitely think that looking at an incentives framework for these sectors matters. I regret sometimes that that's the first question. No, because I think, look, we've had this conversation recently on the economic diversification and growth framework. And the fact that in around, I think it was 2019 or so, we did a couple of reports looking at our tax expenditure. Mm-hmm. What is the revenue that the government of Barbados is foregoing because of the concessions, the very expansive concessions framework that we had been enforcing at the time. And what we realize is that across the sectors, that tax expenditure, that revenue that we're foregoing is about $850 million a year. And so based on the compliance issues with respect to the global frameworks, tax frameworks that we have to meet, and others, we realize that we have to vary that, right? And one of the things that I've always been a fan of, and when I was in economic affairs before we started to look at, was just having a very predictable and automatic way of dealing with this issue of concessions. And that's what the Economic Diversification and Growth Fund really is about. Can we kind of earmark a percentage of an investment to say, you know, your concessions will be the value of this, or that it will be a transfer or a subsidy of this amount? I say all that to say that the predictability that you're looking for by asking about what can be expected and what would be the incentives framework can absolutely be accomplished easily. And that is part of the doing business enhancements that we have contemplated under BERT. But apart from that, I also think that a reindustrialization needs a certain degree of flexibility. And that's why I think that rather than predict sectors, I mean, we know that we want, as James said, to have kind of these low cost kinds of sectors, low transfer costs. So we don't want to have to come to a port and have all of our exports be on goods that have high transaction costs. We want to diversify that by having goods that and services that have lower transaction costs. But I think that once we fix some of these productivity and competitiveness issues, that then we don't have to be as prescriptive in these sectors. Mm-hmm. And that we will start to crowd in some interesting sectors, some investors, especially tech investors, that want to be here for other reasons, that want to be here because of the innovative environment, that want to be here because of the competitiveness. And in that way, you know, I think that we will see a reindustrialization that is exciting for people. But I think that the key is in having a framework that is predictable, that new entrepreneurs entering the market can know what to expect so that they can align their business with the global markets. And that is what we intend to deliver through GIGA across all sectors.
That was another episode of the BCCI's Let's Talk Business, as we heard the BCCI post-budget presentation part 2. Thank you for listening. That's it for another edition of Let's Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Join us again next time as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more.